Good evening and welcome to Representatives Joe Fitzgibbon and Eileen Cody's live telephone town hall. My name is Billy and I'll be moderating tonight's call. We're calling you live from the state capitol to give you an opportunity to ask your elected representatives any questions you might have on issues like the state budget, healthcare, jobs, transportation, or anything else that's on your mind. If you have a question for Joe and Eileen, all you need to do is press star 3 on your phone and we'll connect you with a staff person who will place you in the question queue. Pressing star 3 right now is all you need to do to ask your elected officials a question on tonight's call. Again, this is a live telephone town hall. We're calling you tonight because you're a registered voter in the 34th Legislative District, and Representatives Cody and Fitzgibbon want to hear from you on the issues that you're concerned about. We'd like to get to as many questions as possible, so again, press star 3 if you'd like to ask a question. Now I'll turn it over to Eileen and Joe for some opening remarks.
Good evening. This is Representative Eileen Cody.
And this is Representative Joe Fitzgibbon. Want to welcome you to the call tonight. This is always one of our favorite nights of the year when we can hear from a lot of constituents about what is on your mind. First, we want to give you a quick update on what we are working on down here this session. This is my first session as the chair of the House Environment Committee. So I've been spending a lot of time getting up to speed on the issues before that committee, and we've moved some really important bills out this year, such as one landmark piece of legislation to make sure that oil transportation through our state, whether it's by boat or by rail, is safer and that communities have information about potentially hazardous materials going through their communities. We've also advanced legislation promoting the recycling of mercury-containing light bulbs and household paint, and I'm excited to have some really meaningful pieces of legislation coming out of the House Environment Committee this year. Also continuing to work on finding pathways to reducing greenhouse gas emissions from Washington State.
And I am still chair of the House Health Care and Wellness Committee, and we are working on several things this year. Of course, we continue to monitor the implementation of the Affordable Care Act and how well we are doing in signing up people across the state of Washington, and we actually are very happy with the progress that's being made there. We actually are second in the country in success right behind California, so we've been happy with how things are going there. We have over 300,000 people that didn't have health care that now do in the state of Washington because of the Affordable Care Act. We're also working on trying to improve the transparency of pricing in healthcare, just and quality, so that you will be able to tell where you can go for a quality but less expensive product. In like it's just used as an example. If you need to have an MRI, it's a different price depending on what hospital you go to. So we're looking at trying to improve that transparency, and we're also looking at a redesign of mental health and chemical dependency programs to try and bring them into our physical health and treat the whole person rather than body parts, as we usually refer to it. And again, the governor is leading the way in working on the healthiest next generation. We all know that our kids are not getting as much exercise as they did in the past, and the studies now show that this generation actually may not outlive the generation prior to them, and this is the first time in the history of the country. And so we need to turn that around, and so we're working on ways to get them more active and more but just really physically active in attacking the obesity problem.
All right. Thank you, Eileen and Joe. And once again, folks, you are on the line with your state representatives, Eileen Cody and Joe Fitzgibbon. If you'd like to ask your lawmakers a question, you should go ahead and press star 3. That's star 3 if you'd like to ask them a question. First, we're going to talk to Margo. Margo, you're on the line.
Oh, good. Well, the question I put forward was about parking permits, and I hear this talk of canceling them, and I'm still driving, and I'm still getting about, and I'm 83, almost 84, and I hope what will happen is that the powers that be will go after the abusers of the permit, but let us people who have trouble walking use them.
Well, Margo, I think you'll be happy to know that that's exactly what they're working on with the bill that you heard about. As it was originally introduced, it was going to get rid of the free parking that you get with your disabled pass, but that's not the way the bill is now. I know it has moved out of the committee, and it will still continue the free parking that you enjoy today when you're at a, you know, when you have a pay spot. But it is going to try and crack down on those abusers that you're talking about. And you're right, there's a lot of people that don't necessarily need that parking permit that often ask for it. As a nurse, I see that regularly. And we try and encourage people that it's actually good for them to have to walk maybe if they can do it. But the idea is that they will have a different kind of a scan on your parking pass so that the parking patrol can tell if it's an outdated pass, because that's the other thing that happens is that it's hard for the parking enforcement officers to know whether it's an up-to-date pass that's on the screen. So they're working on updating that technology. So I think it's going to work out fine for you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Cody. As a reminder, folks, go ahead and press *3 if you have a question on the state budget, education, healthcare, transportation, anything. Go ahead and press *3 on your phone now. Next, we're going to talk to Samuel. Samuel has a question about ferry funding. Samuel, you're on the line.
Yeah, for years, the ferries have to go hat in hand to get money to operate. When is the legislature? I mean, this is what, 10, 12 years this has been going on? When are they going to get serious and budget a workable budget for the ferry system?
Thanks, Samuel. That's a great question. You know, as long as the state ferry system has been operated since the 1950s, it's never really been on totally sound financial footing, except for a few brief years in the 90s. When the voters repealed the motor vehicle excise tax in 1999, that really sank a big hole into the ferry system's budget. And since then, we have not kept pace with building the new ferries that we need to. It's only in the last 5 or so years that we've really started building, getting new boats under construction. And they're built in our district in West Seattle at Vigor Shipyards. So that's good news. We finally have a couple new boats coming online, and at least one of those will eventually serve the Vashon route. As far as operating funding for the system, that's a huge problem, and you're exactly right about that. We in the House, Eileen and I both voted for a transportation revenue package back in June that would have not only finished the construction of a third new ferry, would have also plugged the ongoing hole in the ferry system's revenue, so we would not be facing big service cuts. We've both been strong supporters of finding a path for transportation revenue in our state, both for ferries but also for roads and for buses and for safe infrastructure all around. Unfortunately, the Senate didn't take action on that. We are still hoping that the Senate will see the light and understand that for all of our transportation needs, roads and ferries and buses, the Senate will decide to move forward on a transportation package so that the ferry system doesn't have to constantly, and ferry-dependent communities like Vashon, don't have to live in fear of really devastating cuts.
All right. Thank you, Representative Fitzgibbon. And folks, I know I sound like a bit of a broken record here, but go ahead and press *3 on that phone if you'd like to ask your lawmakers from the 34th District a question. Next up, we have Gwendolyn. Gwendolyn has a question on education. Gwendolyn, you're on the line.
My name is Gwendolyn, and I was interested in your thoughts on the highly capable students, K through 12. It's part of general ed at this point in time, but the budget is so low. We seem to put so much effort into No Child Left Behind, but the kids who really want to learn and want to excel, we seem to put hardly any money into it. Dr. Susan Enfeld here in the Highline School District is trying to expand that program, but we need the state money to really make these programs really work well. So I would like to know what your thoughts are on the kids that are highly capable, that want good education. When are we going to start funding them?
That's a great question. Thanks. The One of the things that I think is really important to us as we try to improve education in our state is that we don't have teachers that are just teaching to the test and trying to force all students into the same little box. As you said, there's some students that really benefit from the kind of highly capable programs that some school districts are able to offer. And then there are some kids that really struggle, and we want to make sure that, you know, for example, for special ed and kids with developmental disabilities, that they're not trying to be forced up held to standards that just aren't realistic for them to meet. We understand very clearly that we need to increase funding for education in our state so that programs like the Highly Capable program don't get left on the chopping block when budget time comes. We are under a order from the state Supreme Court that says to increase funding for education by about $4 billion, which is a lot. We're going to have to work pretty hard to come up with a way to find that money, but we're also glad that they told us that, because we know that for a long time the state hasn't been fully funding education, and I think any parent with kids in public schools, or any teacher in our public schools sees that every day. So we are going to be working really hard over the next couple of years to try to make sure that we can fully fund education so that highly capable programs for kids with special needs, and everybody else are able to get the top-notch education that they're going to need.
Thank you, Joe. And once again, folks, you're on the line with State Representative Eileen Cody and State Representative Joe Fitzgibbon. Go ahead and press *3 if you'd like to ask a question. Next up is Kathleen. Kathleen has a question about environment. Kathleen, you're up.
I have two questions, really, if they can both be addressed. One is, what is existing legislation in the state of Washington regarding hydraulic fracturing for natural gas extraction? Is it legal to frack in Washington? And two, what is the current status of the coal train and the coal, the port in Bellingham for commodities distribution? What's the current status of that project?
Sure. Why don't I tackle that? We don't have laws against fracking in Washington State. That just really hasn't been something that's come up here, because we don't have any identified fossil fuel reserves in Washington State. There haven't been any proposals to do hydraulic fracking for natural gas here, so it hasn't really been something that's on the radar. Much more on the front burner for us has been the movement of fossil fuel through our states, as you identified coal and then also increasingly oil moving by train through our state. There are two proposals to build very large coal export terminals, one up in Bellingham and one down south in Longview, that are undergoing the permitting and environmental review process. The one up in Bellingham looks like it is kind of a long shot at this point because of a variety of permitting factors on the ground there and really strong objections from the Lummi tribe. The Longview project is not as far along in the review process, but yeah, I have really deep concerns about the fact that Washington would become a factor in the rapid growth of burning of coal in China. If both of those facilities were to get built, then the amount of coal passing through our state would equal more greenhouse gas emissions than the total amount burned in our state. And I just question whether that's the kind of future that we want for our state, either the kind of economic future or to fuel climate change that much, if that's really in line with Washington values. So there's probably going to be a push this year by some of the coal export interests to try to reduce the level of environmental review that those projects have to go through, and that's just something I would strongly oppose. I think it's really important that the review cover as much as possible of the impacts to our state and outside of our state.
All right, folks, and that was Chair of the House Environment Committee, Joe Fitzgibbon, your state representative. We also have the Chair of the Healthcare Committee, Eileen Cody, on the line tonight. So if you'd like to ask a question, go ahead and press *3 on your phone now. Next up, we have a question from Patricia. Patricia, you're on the line.
Hi, good evening. Thank you. My concern is economic issues, especially for the disabled and the elderly. And it's really important. I know that there's been a push for the privatization with free market capitalism of our Social Security system, and I'm very much against that. It's a social program that has worked, and Medicare, it helps keep people out of poverty. and I would like to know your stance on maintaining it as a social program as it was initially created to be, and how it will keep our seniors and our disabled viable, citizens in our community that can contribute economically and for the better of their health.
Well, we both support Medicare to continue just as it is. Actually would love to see the federal government increase the amount that they pay to our doctors and hospitals in this state, because we have done such a good job of keeping down the price of health care. Our doctors and hospitals don't get reimbursed as much as the facilities in Florida, for an example, do. So that's one of the problems that we would like to see addressed, but we certainly want to see Medicare continue to offer the benefits. I'm almost that age, getting close. So I want to make sure that it's going to be there when I retire, too.
Thank you, Representative Cody. And yes, once again, go ahead and press *3 on that phone if you'd like to ask a question. Next up is Eleanor. Eleanor has a question about transportation.
I have a statement. Because of today, the Seahawks parade, just the limits of our transportation here in Seattle just are very great, and I think the state should pay for some more of our transportation costs. But my big thing is, thank you, Eileen, Cody. It's because of you that we are ahead of all of these other states in taking care of Medicare. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome, and I'm glad to know that you know I've been working on health care for years.
Sure, and I'll talk a little bit about transportation, Eleanor. Thank you for the question. I think we were both in Olympia today, so we missed the parade, but from what I heard, there were over 700,000 people downtown Seattle, and a whole lot of them got there by bus and by train and by ferry. And if you were trying to get downtown today in a car, that was probably a pretty bad idea. We do have a lot of limits in our transit system in Seattle. The part of the problem is our geography. You know, we're Seattle's such a narrow city. There's so many bodies of water and so many hills to cross, go up and down, that we have a lot of bottlenecks and a lot of bridges. One of my priorities in my time in the legislature has been to secure sustainable funding for King County Metro. We found, with my first year in the legislature in 2011, we were able to get a temporary two-year solution for Metro's funding problems through, just barely. But unfortunately, that is running out, and because of, as I said earlier about ferries, opposition in the Senate to funding to fixing transportation, they have not agreed with solutions we put forward in the House to sustainably fund King County Metro. The good news is that it looks likely that your county council is going to allow the voters of King County to vote in April of this year on whether or not to have a small increase in the sales tax and an increase in vehicle license fees to pay for local roads and to maintain bus service. It's really fortunate that they have that option, because the options we were trying to secure for them, which we thought would have been, and they thought as well, would have been better, more sustainable options, got blocked by Senate Republicans. So we are going to continue to push to find solutions for King County Metro so they can both protect and grow bus service, because we already know anybody who's commuting from West Seattle, Liberian, or Vashon into downtown Seattle in the morning knows how packed those buses can be. They can't just maintain service, they have to grow service, and we're going to try to find the right local options for them and also find some state dollars for them. We have put a lot of state dollars into bus service, particularly in West Seattle, in the last couple of years to help with the construction impacts of the viaduct, but that's about to run out, and we are doing everything we can to make sure that bus service isn't cut and that is actually expanded.
Thank you, Joe. And once again, folks, I know, go ahead and press *3 on your phone if you'd like to ask Eileen or Joe a question about the state budget, education, healthcare, anything you got. Go ahead and press *3 on your phone now. Next up, we have Shelley. Shelley, you're on the line.
Hello. This is Shelley and I'm Eileen Cody's dental hygienist. And I want to ask Eileen if she has flossed today. Anyway, I'm also watching my grandkids right now. My question is, I try to keep up as a dental hygienist that does a lot of volunteer work and a lot of free cleanings for people who don't have dental insurance. And I'm getting worn out, and I know under the new Affordable Care Act, children are mandated to have insurance. I'm not sure how that's going to work. I'd like to know about that. And also, when are the struggling working class that don't have insurance, which is about 50% of the state doesn't have dental insurance, will our state start helping people on Medicaid and people from lower incomes with dental, oral health care, since, of course, I think it's a huge issue, and I think a lot of people would agree with me. So to restate my question would be, in a quicker manner, who's going to pay for the child-mandated care, and is there going to be any help for the working-class poor and Medicaid patients?
Well, Shelley, I promise I'll floss tonight. And thanks for the question. The child-mandated care, it was passed, that was in the Affordable Care Act, and so it's available right now in the exchange either as it's a freestanding plan for the most part, but we passed a bill out of health care today that will allow plans to, we call it embedded dental, so it will just be part of the health care plan. And so that's going to be moving forward. And the adults, we reinstated last year in the budget Medicaid for adults, which had been cut during the hard times of the financial for the state in the past few years, but we did put it back in last year. And the other issue for that, though, is that there will be offering it in the exchange for adults, hopefully by 2016. So it's not available now, it won't be next year, but we will hopefully have it available for people to purchase by 2016.
Thank you, Representative Cody. Next up, we have Alfonso. Alfonso has a question about marijuana. Alfonso, you're on the line.
Thank you. My concern basically stems from my experience mentoring and working with youth at risk as far back as the 80s with the old Metro Center YMCA, and dealing with kids who eventually become addicted to hard drugs. And that being the preface, since the legalization of marijuana in our state, and I do recognize the medicinal values of medical marijuana, but since the legalization, it's been my observation at my shop, which is across the street from the high school in Kent, I see more and more high school kids blatantly smoking out in the open. I've actually had some kids on my property sitting on a wall by the train station just smoking pot, and I'd walk out and say, what are you guys doing? You know, we can do whatever we want because it's legal. So my question is, what is being done to reach out to the youth in Washington and let them know that this is not, just because it's legal doesn't mean it's right or good for their bodies? And number two, was legalization or necessary? Couldn't they have decriminalized it and not made this financial expediency to just make a revenue builder for the state? Thank you.
Well, Alfonso, I think that you have identified a problem that we are all aware of, that we keep sending our kids somewhat of a mixed message on what's good for them to use and what's not. It is still illegal for kids under 18 to be accessing marijuana. Or actually, it's 21 for recreational and 18 for medicinal. It has to be administered by the parents. But the problem is, in the initiative, they did put quite a bit of money to go towards the outreach for drug prevention, and we will be seeing that. But of course, because we haven't gotten any money yet, that hasn't gone to the Department of Health. So I'm afraid that we are not seeing any increase in prevention at this point, and probably won't which is kind of a bad thing that we will start seeing more use of marijuana without the prevention dollars being put into to efforts beforehand.
And the one thing I would add to that is just that if people are smoking marijuana in public, that is still illegal. You know, just like it's not legal for someone to drink a beer out on the street. It's not legal to smoke marijuana in public. It's legal for them to do that in the privacy of their own homes if they're 21 and older. But that is not something that changed. But the people did vote, pretty convincingly in favor of legalizing marijuana. We want to make sure that works and doesn't have any unintended consequences. But in the meantime, I see people smoking pot on the streets, and that's something that I think as the law gets settled, the police are going to eventually be a little bit more assertive with folks who are using it publicly.
All right, folks, we're about halfway through the call tonight, so if you have a question, don't hesitate. Press *3 on your phone now. We'll get you in line to talk to your state representatives. Next up, we have Noelle. Noelle has a question about energy. Noelle, you're on the line.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, I have a question about regulating our electrical and our utilities because of the way they are not helping the low-income people. Like myself, I'm disabled, and we have a one income, and we don't even qualify as a two-person income, but yet we're having to pay high rates for utilities and electric.
Okay. Noelle, do you live in Seattle?
Yes.
Okay. So Seattle has a program for folks who are low income to make sure that to provide you discounted rates. Now, it sounds like maybe you've already looked into that and don't qualify for that, but I do want, maybe if you can get in touch with our office after the call, we can try to identify other resources if Seattle City Lights existing programs for low income energy assistance aren't covering you. One of the quirks in our electricity system in this state is if the electricity is provided by a private company, like it is, say, on Vashon by Puget Sound Energy, then the state does regulate the rates and make sure that the rate increases are not exorbitant and that they're in line with what the utility actually needs. In places like Seattle, where electricity is provided by the city, by city government, like it is with Seattle City Light, the state does not have oversight over them, and they can set their rates wherever they want. But we'll still want to try to find resources for you to make sure that you're able to pay your bills and heat your home and all that. So get in touch with our office either on email or on the web, or give us a call after the call, and we will try to make sure that you can get that assistance that you need. I might just read off our office phone numbers right now just for anybody who's interested in getting connected with services. Mine is 360-786-7952.
And mine's 360-786-7978.
All right. Thank you guys for that. Next up, we have Peggy in West Seattle. Peggy, you're on the line.
I'm here. You want the question?
You're up, Peggy.
Yeah. And I want to thank my representatives. They've been doing a good job for me, I think. It's about the gun control. We're going to have a hearing coming up, I believe, and I'm very concerned about having guns anywhere near children, and we need to do some things. We need really to start protecting our families and our households.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Peggy. The House actually has already, and the Senate, both sides have already had the hearing on the initiatives. I assume you're referring to the initiatives, and it was quite. They had them on both the dueling initiatives on the same day, and it was on the same day that Gabby Giffords came to testify in favor. We had people carrying rifles into the hearing room, so I was quite amazed and worried that she might not appreciate that. But anyhow, they have had the hearing. We don't expect that we will actually be able to vote on that. I don't think there's the support in the House or the Senate to get it passed, even though both Joe and I support the background check bill, reform. But we will have an opportunity. Both of them will end up on the ballot, and you'll have an opportunity to vote about it.
We also passed legislation out of the House last year, which unfortunately again died in the Senate, specifically to get guns out of the hands of people who have been convicted of domestic violence or stalking. And we thought that was just an incredibly common sense step because of the high rates of people going after somebody that they were abusing or stalking with a gun. So that's another example of something that we're going to continue to support and try to push through.
All right. Thank you, Joe and Eileen. And go ahead and press *3 on that keypad right now if you'd like to ask a question of your state representatives. Next up, we have Marga. Marga, you're on the line.
Yes. I wanted to know, what are the chances of getting some kind of a universal health care for our state, some kind of single-payer health plan that would cover everybody? I don't know how they pay for it, maybe a percentage of their earnings, or I don't know. But I'm just wondering what the chances are of something like that.
Well, Margaret, I'd say that there's a lot of people in our district that are big single-payer supporters, but the problem is there's just not enough across the state. And if you look at how much trouble that President Obama has had even implementing the health care reform that he has had that didn't do anything to replace insurance companies, I think it demonstrates how hard it is to get large change done, and a single-payer system is definitely would be a large change. But I think that at least we're making strides of making sure that everybody here in Washington State does have health insurance with the passage of the Affordable Care Act. And I'll always hold out hope that maybe at some point the business community would realize that it would be easier for us all if we went to a single-payer system, but they're certainly not there at this time.
Thank you, Representative Cody. Next up, we have Barrett. Barrett, you're on the line.
Yeah, I would like to know, is anything we can do to stop the possibility of coal and oil being transported through Seattle? I think that would be absolutely horrible. They don't even cover the coal. But anyway, will it go off for voting so we can have a chance to vote against it if we want to?
Unfortunately, there is not really a legal pathway for people in Seattle to vote on that, and there's not even really a very clear way for the state to stop it if the legislature were so inclined, because the federal government has pretty much exclusive jurisdiction over what travels by rail in this country, and that's just a legacy of how our country grew up around railroads. Is the national government is in charge of regulating that. There are sort of local processes that have to take place for environmental review before the coal terminals get built, and those are both still in the early stages, both up in Bellingham and down in Longview. Now, the Longview terminal, if that gets built, that would not increase the amount of coal coming through Seattle, because it comes from Montana and Wyoming by train, and it would just stop before it got to Seattle. But I think that's, even though it wouldn't be moving through Seattle, I still think that's a concerning project. But the project up in Bellingham, which is the one that would increase traffic through Seattle, it could have impacts on air quality as well as on just traffic, as you'd have a big increase in the number of trains coming through Seattle every day. I don't think that one's going to get built. I think there's too many objections to it, such as cities like Seattle and Tacoma and Everett that don't want to see that massive increase in traffic on trains coming through. But that there's not really a legal way that we would have voters in Seattle have a chance to stop that, because the federal government says that we can't control what moves through on rail. But we are going to try to get more information about oil in particular. You may have seen in the news that there have been just a huge increase in the number of oil train accidents. A city in Quebec was basically destroyed back last year, and 47 people were killed. And a city in North Dakota just last month had to be evacuated because of an oil train explosion. There's more oil spilled from trains in 2013 than in the previous 40 years combined. So there's just been a huge increase in the number of accidents there, and that's why we are pushing so hard on this bill to increase disclosure and transparency around oil moving through communities so that cities and particularly emergency responders like fire departments can be ready in case that starts to move through.
All right. Thank you, Representative Fitzgibbon. And once again, folks, if you're just joining us, you're talking to your state legislators from the 34th District, Representative Eileen Cody and Representative Joe Fitzgibbon. Next up, we're going to talk to Bill. Bill has a question about a state bank. Bill, you're on the line.
Thank you. I was wondering, a couple years ago, I had listened to a talk on establishing a state bank, and it was quite impressive. I was ended up being quite in favor of it. I'm wondering where it is in the process, if that's something you both agree on, if that's something that we can actually do here. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill, for that question. I think I signed on to that, Bill. I don't really remember. I know it was filed last year. Former Representative Hasegawa and now State Senator Hasegawa has been the big proponent on that bill. It hasn't moved. On either side, because it's been introduced on both the House and the Senate, but I do believe that he has been trying to make the point that if we had a state bank, that some of the difficulties that the new marijuana industry is having with banking could be answered, because there's a lot of, there's questions about whether the banks will actually even take the money, and so the marijuana dispensaries have been operating in cash only basis at this point, which is also what's causing some of the increased crime and problems that they have suffered from. But at this point, the bill has not moved forward.
All right. Thank you for that, Representative Cody. Next up, we have Talia. Talia, you're on the line. Talia, are you there?
We lost Talia.
I'm here. Sorry about
all
that.
All right. Go ahead and ask your question.
I wanted to ask what Washington's going to do about, helping businesses and residents invest in solar energies and making Washington green.
That's a great question. Thanks, Talia. That's something that we talk about a lot. So first, I'll talk about what we have in place right now. The voters passed back in 2006 Initiative 937, which established in law requirements that all of the major electricity providers in the state would have to provide a certain percentage of renewable energy as a percent of their total electricity. Currently it's 3%, and then has to be renewable, and then in 2016 that goes up to 9%, and in 2020 that goes up to 15%. And we're talking now about what are we going to do after 2020 to continue the increase in renewable energy in our state. And that's mainly wind. To some degree, it's also solar and forest products and things like that. So that's something that we have to fight to protect every year, because a lot of the utilities push really hard to weaken that law and to reduce the renewable energy targets. And we think we need to move forward. We think we need to lead the way in a clean energy future so that Washington is looked to as an innovator. Specifically to solar, our state has a very complicated program that provides sort of financial incentives for solar, for you to get solar panels on your roof, for example, that make it really a smart financial decision for a lot of people. Even in the cloudy, rainy Seattle area, you can actually get quite a lot of power from solar panels on your roof. One of the projects that's underway, not in my committee, the Environment Committee, but in another committee this year, is trying to improve that program so some of the barriers that exist in it can be taken down, and we can access those dollars for more solar on roofs, and also so communities can get together. I know there's a lot of interest in doing this on Vashon, to have the communities sort of pool together and invest in a solar energy that could power a variety of homes and businesses there. For example, one of the problems is that the law as currently written doesn't allow somebody else who isn't the installer to own the solar system once it's built. So it's a pretty convoluted program, but we're going to try to make it better so more people can get solar panels.
And I would just add that the state also has, in our capital budget, when we give money to different nonprofit organizations to build facilities that are for the community, that we are requiring them to be LEED certified. They have to be environmentally sound. And if in West Seattle, we have actually the highest LEED certified, I think in the country right now, neighborhood house on 34th and Morgan. And if you haven't seen that, you go up and take a tour. They're very proud of the building, and we all are, because they're actually producing more energy than they're using, and I think they're selling some back to the city of Seattle.
All right, folks, we have about 15 minutes left in the call, so if you have questions, don't waste time. Hit star 3 on your phone now, and we'll get you in line to talk to your state representatives. Next up, we're going to talk to Jared. Jared, you're on the line.
Hey, yes, I am a medical marijuana user, and I was calling because I was worried about all, like, how many dispensaries were going to be in the state, because I was worried about, like, I wouldn't be able to go and get mine myself. So I was wondering how many are going to be allowed in the state all total.
Well, we aren't sure exactly how many, and thanks, Jared, I forgot to say, for the question. We are making changes to the medical marijuana law. You may have heard that actually the Liquor Control Board had first made recommendations that they didn't think we should allow personal grows, but that has been changed, and people with medical marijuana will still be allowed to grow for their own personal use. But the problem that we do face is that the dispensaries, the amount of dispensaries that we have had pop up, which are not technically legal at this point, have become somewhat of a problem. And you may have heard that there's some parts of the state that are trying to ban having any dispensaries. And a bill actually passed out of committee today to preempt that, so that individual cities and counties would not be able to ban the dispensaries. But and then I've been working on the changes in the medical marijuana law, and where that bill is at now, we're going to be hearing it again in appropriations on Friday. But it would allow you to have grows, and it would also allow specific medical dispensaries that would, at this point, we have it licensed through the Liquor Control Board, but we're trying to figure out if there's a way to have the Department of Health actually administer that. And so there's still going to be changes in that bill before it's passed into law. But we don't know exactly the number of dispensaries that there will be. That we're trying to evaluate that at this point.
All right. Thank you, Eileen. And if you're just joining us on the call tonight, you're talking to your state representatives, Eileen Cody and Joe Fitzgibbon. Next up, we are going to talk to Chris. Chris has a question about campaign finance reform. Chris, you're on the line.
Hi there. I'd like to say thank you, first of all, for the work that you do on our behalf. Oh, and my name is Chris. Also want to thank you for providing this opportunity for us to speak out on issues that concern us. I've been really concerned over the last few years about the way campaign financing has been going, and I just would want to urge you to support in any way that you can. I know you've got lots of other stuff to do, but along the way, if there's any way that you can support campaign finance reform in Washington and on the level of amendment to the U.S. Constitution, that, you know, focusing on public financing of political campaigns and overturning Citizens United, I think you would have the appreciation of a large part of your constituency. And I would also like to speak on behalf of Washington State employees. I would like to see them receive their due. You know, it seems like the budget has been balanced for quite a while by shortchanging state employees. They have tried to remain dedicated and resourceful and persevering in the face of lengthy financial hardships caused by salary cuts and reductions in hours, and they have not received a single cost of living raise in, I think, over 5 years. So just wanted to hear your comments on those two issues, and I appreciate your time.
Well, thanks, Chris. I'll start with campaign finance reform. Eileen and I have both been supporters of passing a House joint memorial to the U.S. Congress suggesting that they amend the Constitution to overturn Citizens United. Obviously, with the current Congress, they're not getting a lot done, including that. But In the meantime, we have a pretty transparent campaign finance system in Washington by comparison to a lot of states, and that's something that we're proud of. We're always trying to make it better. We've also got a lot of support in the community for public financing of campaigns, creating that as an option so that candidates for office don't have to go hat in hand to major donors and businesses and other organizations to raise money for their campaigns. There's legislation this year which has been introduced for a number of years now, but we really would like to move it forward this year that would specifically start out with the state Supreme Court and create public financing for state Supreme Court candidates, because that's, you know, of all the things we elect, that seems like the one where it's most obvious that they shouldn't be influenced by campaign contributions. So we hope that we can move that issue forward and that conversation forward so in the long run we can move towards more public financing in general.
And I'd just add that we are very aware of what a great job our state employees do and that they have borne the brunt of a lot of the cuts that we have had to take over the last several years with the recession. And unfortunately, I don't think that they're going to be seeing any increase this year, but we hope that the economy is picking up and that by next year that we will be able to give a cost of living raise to the state employees.
All right. Thanks, Eileen and Joe. And Wes, yes, one more time. Go ahead and press *3 on the phone if you'd like to ask a question. Next up, we have Barbara. Barbara, you're on the line.
Thank you. I am curious, the bill that has been introduced, the Healthier Next Generation bill, which is House Bill 2643 and Senate Bill 6383, that would establish the Governor's Council for the Healthiest Next Generation. Would each of you share your thoughts on this bill?
Well, it's actually in my committee, and we passed it out of committee today. I forget what day it is by this point. But we have moved it out, and I think that it's a great message that to have people working together to try and make sure that they have our next generation be healthier. And I've really encouraged the governor to take a strong stand on this because he's such an athlete himself that I liken it to when Kennedy did the, and you can tell how old I am, when Kennedy had the physical fitness craze for youngsters back in the 60s. And I think that Governor Inslee can do the same thing for us. And I'm hoping that we can get the Seahawks on board so that they can actually start encouraging more. The NFL has done a program of trying to get kids to do 60 minutes of exercise a day, and I'm hoping that we can get them more active in it.
I echo Eileen. I'm really excited that this issue is getting attention from the governor and others. One of the things that I've worked hard on in the Transportation Committee is to try to secure funding for a program we have called Safe Routes to School, where we try to make sure that there are safe sidewalks and safe ways, safe streets to bike on for kids that get to school that aren't dropped off at school by their parents or taking the school bus. In particular, in Seattle, we've seen the school district really cut back on school buses as a way to save money, which is not something that we're excited about. But in the meantime, we want to be sure the kids have an option to get to school safely by walking or biking, which is also, turns out, really good for their health and gets them it helps them develop really good, healthy habits young.
All right. Thank you, Joe and Eileen. Next up, we're going to talk to Carol. Carol, you're on the line.
Hello. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. My question is concerning the vote the King County voters will be voting on in April for transit and transportation. And what if that does not get passed and, you know, a lot of bus routes then get canceled? What is the state going to do? Are they going to do anything to act on transportation, or are they just going to say, well, too bad?
Well, I can only speak for us here. Eileen and I have been really, and our Senator Sharon Nelson have all been really strong supporters of funding transportation, including transit. Again, we passed a transportation package out of the House back in June of last year that would have really helped King County make sure that this was not something that was going to happen, that we would go through these 17% cuts. We can't control what the Senate does. The Senate Republicans have time and time again blocked action on transportation funding, and that's a huge concern for Eileen and I. Are both bus riders. We both take the bus, you know, practically daily. And those 17% cuts are going to mean huge, huge mobility impacts for people like us who ride the bus because we choose to, because it's easier, but also for people who have no other choices, people who can't drive for any number of reasons, who are too young or too old or who are disabled. That would have devastating impacts in our communities. And so if that vote doesn't pass, and you know, I think that that's something that the voters are going to have to decide for themselves in April, then King County is going to be faced with some really, really tough choices. And that is something that we are not excited about, but it is a consequence of just the fact that there is not enough money to go around to pay for all the things that we need to have a thriving community unless folks are willing to step up and pay a little bit more in taxes.
All right. Thank you, Representative Fitzgibbon. We've got time for just a few more questions here. So next up, we're going to talk to Evan. Evan has a question about school lunches. Evan, you're on the line.
Yes, I was wondering. I live in West Seattle, and I have two boys, and I was wondering what's being done to improve the quality of school lunches.
Well, Evan, I can't really speak to what they're doing in the school district, but I know that that's one of the discussions that we're having here in the state, and we are in trying to encourage not actually cooking in the schools. The Education Committee and the Healthcare Committee actually had a joint work session on school lunches, and we had the school district in Spokane has actually moved to, and now I can't remember the title, it's cooking from scratch so that they are actually making the lunches like they used to do. And they actually were able to show, they got a grant to start it out, but they were able to show within a year that they had more kids buying lunch and eating those good lunches than they did prior, and they didn't lose money on it as long as they had to have the grant money for a startup, but after a year they were able to pay for it. So we're hoping that we can encourage more school districts to do their part and try and move in that direction. I would encourage you as a parent to make sure that you let your school board know that and that you want to see them moving in that direction. And I believe that the PTAs have been trying to get some changes made.
Thank you, Representative Cody. Next up, we're going to talk to Lily. Lily has a question about mental health.
Hello. So first of all, this has been a really nice experience. I'm very grateful that you guys called me. And secondly, so I have a family member who struggles with mental health issues, and I just want to know what the status is of mental health in this state. I mean, are you doing anything to ensure the people that need help can actually get it?
Yes, Lily, thanks for your question. And the mental health system is something that we have been working on to try and improve in the state, but I will say that it seems like progress has been slow. It seems that we're chronically underfunded, and every time that we try and add some more money, it just never seems to be enough. So I know that there's a lot of frustrations. I don't know whether you read that article that was in the paper. It was the front page about a week ago on Sunday of the couple whose son was killed by the Seattle police when he'd had a mental health break. He actually, at the time, had been committed for a short period of time and was discharged against medical advice, but the courts didn't think that they could hold him. So he was allowed to go home. He bought a gun, shot it off in his apartment, and unfortunately then thought that the police were zombies that were coming after him, and then was shot and killed by the police. I've been working with that family to make some changes so that at least family members that don't agree, if the county designated mental health individual that comes and evaluates someone that's having a psychotic episode or increasingly becoming more dangerous to themselves or others, that if they do not feel that the person can be held, that the family would be able to go to the court system and have an appeal to see if they cannot get help. Because I've heard a lot of stories from family members about really the frustration of not being able to get help for individuals. So I'm hoping that we'll see that get passed this year. We're also working on getting some improved funding. The good thing was with the Medicaid expansion, we've got, as I said, 300,000 more people insured in the state, And that means that there's more mental health care available for those individuals, which also helps mean that the money that we've been spending, just that state-only money, can go further. So I'm hoping that we're going to be making some progress.
Thank you, Representative Cody. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for tonight. I'll hand the phone over to your lawmakers for some closing remarks, but first I want you to know that if you didn't get a chance to ask your question, you can leave a message for Representative Cody and Fitzgibbon at the conclusion of this call. Eileen and Joe, take it over.
Well, thanks everybody who's been on the call, those of you who had a chance to ask your questions and those of you who did not. We really appreciate hearing from you and knowing what's on your mind. You know, as we come down here during session, every day we meet with a whole lot of constituents, but we know there's a lot more back home who don't have time to come down and talk with us in person. So we appreciate hearing from you. If you didn't have a chance to ask your question to us, as Billy said, you can leave a message after this call is concluded, or you can send us an email. My email is just joe.fitzgibbon@leg.wa.gov.
And I'm Eileen, E-I-L-E-E-N dot Cody, C-O-D-Y, at leg.wad.gov.
We've heard a lot tonight about transportation and about education, about health care, including health and healthy kids, and gun violence. Those are some of the issues that we are working on the hardest on down here in Olympia, and we hope that you'll stay in touch with us and let us know how we're doing.
And I'll just thank you for your participation this evening and close with a reminder that if you haven't got health insurance, that you should still go onto the Washington Health Plan Finder, and that's wahealthplanfinder.org, and sign up for health insurance. You may qualify for either a tax credit, or depending on your level of income, you may actually be able to get free health insurance through Apple Health. So I hope that if you or you know someone that doesn't have health insurance, that you encourage them to sign up.